Welcome in. Time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Hey, welcome in. Time for a daily editorial. You know, I got to tell you, we're going to talk about a number of things today, primarily with the exception of the tanks to the Ukraine issue. We're going to be talking a lot today about the internal political atmosphere in the United States since the Republicans took control of the House. I got to tell you, I am so glad that happened. The two things that happened today that I really think the Republicans deserve a real round of applause. One is the one that I don't think is the most important of the two. But Jim, let's get your opinion on the Pelosi Act. As you said off mic, and I agree with you 100%, that was brilliant on the part of the Republicans.
Yeah, so Josh Hawley in the Senate, he introduced this bill, naming it the Pelosi Act. And basically what it does is it makes it, anybody elected into the House or the Senate has 6 months to divest all of their stock holdings or put them in a blind trust.
Right.
And if they were any funds, if they were to break the rule, any funds that they made would be given to the Treasury, and any losses would not be deductible from their tax returns.
Right.
I think the value to this bill, I'm not sure if it'll pass or not. When you look at the who's benefited most from stock trades in over this last year, it was actually Republicans. Dan Crenshaw is one of them. He's one of the top, I think, five or six or something like that. So what it does, though, it puts the politicians who fail to support this in a big political bind if they vote against it,
right,
if it gets to the floor.
Right.
So
no, I agree 100%, but I think it took some real cojones for that bill to be set in front of the American people so everybody knows about it.
Well, I think it does. I think it's a good move, and I think it will be politically valuable for those that that are willing to support it. It'll be politically detrimental for those that are unwilling to support it.
Right. Do you think the fact that Kevin McCarthy threw Adam Schiff off the Intel committee, do you think that's going to hurt Schiff politically?
Oh, yeah, I do. I think it was an embarrassing moment for him. No more embarrassing than what he's done over the last few years.
I agree.
Lying publicly and using the power of his office.
Right.
I think Kevin McCarthy's response, there's a lot of videos out there. Some of our people have already posted the video on the website. I think his response, Kevin McCarthy's response to the journalist in the interview was brutal. I think some people joked, hey, you know, get call the cops, there's been a murder.
Yeah.
Because he basically just destroyed the media's angle on it, and he destroyed Adam Schiff, and then he finished it up with slamming Swalwell, Eric Swalwell, the California congressman that was sleeping, or at least apparently sleeping, with the Chinese spy.
Yeah.
While on the Intelligence Committee. Now, and he also pointed out that Nancy Pelosi had seen the intelligence reports on Swalwell and did nothing about it. And of course, while they were kicking people off of committees for their political objections to Democratic policies. So I think I agree with you, Al. These are two moments where where Republicans are showing a little bit of spine, and hopefully they stick with it.
I got a question for you. I got off our site in terms of addressing comments, probably half an hour ago when I called you at 9:30. Where exactly was that video posted? It had to be posted under one of the segments.
It was on today, on yesterday's segment. So it's
Sunday?
No, yesterday's.
Tuesday. Okay, who posted it? I bet you it was Tony.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, well, whoever did it, thank you very much, and we'll get on that right away. If you have any questions that you want to ask either Jimmy or myself about our opinions, and by the way, on anything that we talk about in the course of our daily editorials, just let us know at the blog, and I promise you we'll get back to you within, at the very most, 24 hours. You guys are too important to us. We're going to work as hard as we can for you. Having said that, Pretty big news that the U.S. is going to send some tanks, and Germany is also going to send tanks, the Panthers, I believe, to Ukraine.
Yeah, so the U.S. apparently, according to latest reporting, has agreed to send 31 Abrams M1 tanks.
Yeah.
They have an incredible, they have a much longer range than the Russian-built tanks.
Yeah.
And then Germany has allowed the third-party transfer, basically allowing other countries to, Poland in particular, to transfer Leopard 2 tanks, Leopard 2 tanks, to Ukraine. And again, these are more capable tanks. They have better thermal sights, better IR sights, better stabilization mechanisms, and better loading systems than the Russian tanks do. However, and this is problematic, M1 tanks take a ton of fuel. Uh-huh. They take, because of the type of motor they use, they're basically, it's a jet engine. It's a very powerful jet engine. I think it's about 11, gosh, I can't remember how many thousand horsepower, but it's a very, very powerful engine, and it burns fuel dramatically. And it takes a lot of maintenance. The Leopard 2s are also a very technically expensive tank to maintain, which means that there's probably going to be contractors to support these tanks, or potentially repair and refurbishment sites just outside the Ukrainian borders from NATO soldiers, all of which make it more risky and a more problematic situation for potential NATO involvement directly with Russia.
Yeah. Jim, I'm curious about one thing. One of the hot topics on our blog had to do with the national debt. Now, the national debt, when I realized back in about 98 or 99 what was really going on, took an awful lot of my time. I did a lot of speaking about it. It just scared the daylights out of me. And I have to believe that the national debt was a precursor to what happened in 2008. With the financial, I would say, meltdown in the United States. People don't realize how detrimental the national debt is to the future of their country, America.
Yeah, I mean, we're facing this debt, ceiling right now.
Right.
If we don't make it, we default. The value of our bonds and, of course, the trust and faith in, our economic system is down.
Right.
Would suffer significant hit. The bottom line, though, is the American economy is still the largest in the world. A lot of the hype and the fear out there is actually that hype and fear.
Yeah.
But the long-term ramification of carrying debt and unable to pay for it will force decisions that are very, very damaging to people. And let's just face it.
Give me some examples, Jim.
So what do we spend more money on than anything else right now? Social Security.
Right. Oh, I don't want to see that go away.
No, you don't, but...
Oh, I don't.
But the problem is no one wants to see it go away, but that's the biggest impact on our debt, right?
Yeah.
The next is, health, Medicare, Medishare, all these... I'm sorry, Medicare and,
right.
and other medical expenses. And then all are these, when you look at the budget, it's these amounts that we've committed to support people from a federal level that should be done at state and local levels,
right?
And that's creating the debt. We see how much spending is going on to try to for all these social welfare programs and these payoff programs for basically Democratic constituents, and that's going to cost. They'll go away, and there's a political price to be paid when you cut back on that type of spending.
Yeah,
and of course we see the Democrats screaming and yelling at the Republicans and saying, oh, they're going to cut Social Security, and it immediately causes fear. But the reality is someone's going to have to do something about it pretty soon, or we're going to have to increase our revenues. And increasing revenues means raising taxes, which cuts economic growth.
Right.
So it's a bind that we've put ourselves in because we've spent more than we have. And it's incredibly damaging for the future, just like for any family out there.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. It comes pretty close to hurting me pretty bad. But if everybody's in the same position, if somebody can convince me that my funds will be utilized to help our country, I'll make it happen. There's no question about that.
Nobody trusts that anymore, though. Gosh, I mean, the way we're spending money and how much money we've pumped into, Ukraine, all these different expenditures that are going towards
right.
Yeah, no one really trusts it. That's the real problem.
Exactly, exactly. I'm going to ask you a question, kind of a general question. It's something that comes up every now and then on the blog. Got a lot of people who would like to see us go in the direction of term limits for all elected officials. I personally can see a lot of value in that. How about you, Jim?
Yeah, so I've had this discussion with some political operatives and people that are, you know, fairly, I will say, intelligent. And,
yeah.
And, you know, the first response is that makes it a lot more responsive to the people. When you know an incumbent is usually reelected, then there's not that much response.
No.
So term limits would force constant change. And it wouldn't, and people wouldn't be so embedded into the system that they know how to work, how it works, and it becomes so corrupt.
Yeah.
The other counter argument is that you need people with a lot of experience to make sure this works. I used to think that that wasn't a bad idea because you would have more experience, more managed, understand the system, the processes, and make it work. But I'll tell you, I'm really going away from that and more towards mandatory term limits, because what you've got is a constant group of people that operate in Washington that have no fear of being put out of office,
right,
making decisions that completely,
right,
discount the needs of the people.
Right.
And I think we really got to think hard about forcing term limits, maybe 2 terms in the Senate, maybe 3 or 4 in the House at most. And I think that would be, a very, very important tool to ensure we have more response to the voters, if in fact we can get our voting system to be more accurate and stop mail-in voting and no voter ID.
Well, a lot of problems with the voting system, or I should say a lot of detrimental issues about the voting system, are really coming out right now, because it's exemplified in a perfect way in this Kerry Lake situation. Now,
absolutely,
I am looking for some resolution to that situation, maybe as early as this week. Am I being a little too ambitious?
I'd love to see it, but the likelihood is low. I have very little faith right now. And I think, I don't know, if maybe it was CFS or somebody else on the blog yesterday made a comment that there's so little faith in our justice system, and in particular the unbiasedness of our judges.
Yeah.
They're selected by political parties or voted in because of politics, and then they become geared towards not balanced approach in meeting the requirements of the law, but meeting the requirements of their political ideology.
Right.
And because of that, I have little faith that anybody inside Maricopa County is going to stand up and in the judicial system or in the state system and push back against what is clearly a problematic election that has a tremendous number of answers that need to be or questions that need to be asked and answered.
Well, I hope that happens. I don't know. You know, the faith in America by the Americans, I should say, really exemplified by our bloggers, and I agree with them certainly on this issue. There's a lot of pessimism regarding the American system on the part of our bloggers. And most of them, if I'm not mistaken, are pretty eloquent, and they make a lot of sense in some of their criticisms. And I would love to see the United States, now that we have a shot at accomplishing this, I would love to see the psychological aspects of the average guy in the streets' opinion about what's going on in America. I would love to see that become a little bit more optimistic, as it has been in the past, Jim.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've got to reach a really low point, though. We've had diminishing confidence and faith. You know, it ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
There are low points and there's higher points. And of course, you know, a lot of it is based on the information that people get. And the average person out there just doesn't spend the time that you or I or many of the people that listen to this show do in understanding what's happening. And
I disagree with you on that point. I would have to say that our bloggers, the majority of our bloggers, I would have to say, are very well-informed people.
Well, that's what I just said, Al. I just said that unlike you and I and the people on our blog that listen to the show, most people are not.
Yeah.
And you know, there's people that get very involved and take a look and watch this stuff very carefully.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of people just don't spend the time, and they're busy being, you know, they're chasing this shiny little object, or they're trying to go to work, or they're watching, you know, whatever entertainment, you know, Jerry Springer type, you know, stupid show.
I agree with you.
And I think that really, really, you know, that it's part of the plan with corporate interest to keep people diverted. And of course, you're seeing it come over and over again with this problem with Joe Biden and the classified documents, the diversion efforts. And then, you know, as I said, you know, Mike Pence, I think Tucker Carlson last night kind of agreed with me on this one. I will say, I said it the other day first, that Mike Pence was, you know, it looks like it was a diversion act to come in and save Biden because, oh, now any nice guy could do it. With the exception of Trump,
who,
you know, is the evil of all corporate interests, and of course the powerful in Washington that really can't stand to see him potentially win again. And according to most polls right now, he beats Biden, even leftist polls. He beats Biden, and of course he has a significant advantage over DeSantis down in Florida for the primary. So it's going to be hard for someone, if he continues down this road without too many faux pas, it's going to be hard, and I just, whether you love him or hate him, it's going to be hard for them to defeat him in the primaries. And then, of course, it'll depend on who the candidate is for the Democrats and how much manipulation the system is there is.
Yeah, my only comment about Trump at this point, and I would have to say that I'm probably in the camp that supports him, but I support him with one caveat, and that is I wish that he could become a little bit more conciliatory and bring our nation together. There's no reason for that guy to be, based on his record, there's no reason for that guy to be lambasted like he is, Jim.
No, I don't think there's any justification for it. I don't think there ever was. I think it was a political act all the time. It was supported both by the Democratic Party, by the Hillary Clinton campaign, by corporate media, and of course by his own government and Department of Justice. And that has shaped attitudes, and it's made people think of him as a lot different than what he was or is. And I think that's changing a little bit now because he has been more amenable and more positive, and the attempts to undermine him have still been somewhat weak, especially when you compare them to the failures of the Biden administration, the continual failures of the Biden administration. Remember, people want to be safe in their homes.
Yeah.
They want a nation that's sovereign with a sovereign border. I mean, these are absolutes that people support in massive amounts in polling. They want to not support foreign wars. These are things that Trump stood for. And when it comes right down to it, you know, they wanted a good economy and they wanted jobs. These are things that he did. And as much as the Biden regime tries to spin it to say that they've done good in any of these areas, they haven't. They're failing miserably, and you cannot hide it.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, if Trump could pull this country together, he would go down in history as being a really, truly exceptional president if he can do that. And I'm sorry, go ahead, Jim. No,
as you say, the possibility of him pulling it together will be fully dependent on two things. One is the acceptance of the institutional administrative state in Washington, the deep state, if you will, of saying, okay, we're going to work towards good ends for the nation and not for politics. That'll be number one. And number two is the information warfare that's going on against him through the media, through corporate interests, and of course the DNC. The DNC is going to have to suffer so much from Joe Biden. They will not be able to come back with these arguments in order for Trump to be successful. If not, we're going to continue this divide for a long time.
Well, I have to tell you, I am very unhappy about the fact that this is going on, actually, with Trump. And the reason I'm really unhappy about it is, for God's sakes, we have to have a solid country like we had immediately after September 11th. People pulled together, even though they didn't like Bush Jr., people did pull together at that time. I remember seeing some of the headlines, you know, my God, America has never been this united, et cetera, et cetera. I would love to see something like that happen again.
Let's hope it doesn't take some sort of event like 9/11.
That's what I was going to say, Jimmy. Honestly, that's what I was going to say. But the country really pulled together. That event showed me that Americans still believe in America when it really comes down to it. Anything else you want to bring up, man?
Yeah, I really want to talk about this Oleg Deripaska issue and the FBI agent that was arrested or that has been charged for
this.
Accepting money from Deripaska and violates U.S. sanctions.
I want you to do that.
Yeah, here's this very interesting story. And just the news, John Solomon provides a lot of information on this in an article. Russian oligarch keeps showing up in the most inconvenient places for FBI in the Washington elites. And what he outlines is the relationship between where they initially the U.S. government did not want Deripaska to be able to get a visa to come to the United States. Now, remember, Deripaska was the CEO of Rusal, which is the Russian aluminum company. It's incredibly large, very powerful, powerful corporation in Russia.
Yeah.
And they were against him coming in, but it turns out that the FBI under Robert Mueller in 2009 actually asked Deripaska to help the FBI try to recover Robert Levinson. He was an FBI agent that was out looking in the Middle East to help with hostages. He was actually, it looks like, captured, potentially killed by the Iranian. So here you have the U.S. government saying, hey, you can't come in. But then because he's got a bunch of money, they get him involved in trying to help them out. So they use him. And then later on, he becomes a key player in the entire Russia collusion narrative. And once again, the Department of Justice and the FBI turn against him and then use him. Yeah. And now they're going against their own former agent, the CIA director and the CIA chief counterintelligence officer in the New York Bureau.
Yeah.
This guy, what's his name? I'm trying to remember his name again. Charles McGonigal I guess, the FBI agent that's been arrested or at least charged. So this is a complex story. And here's where I think this is going. I think that what is happening right now is the DOJ and the FBI are trying to clean up loose ends from their involvement in the entire Russia collusion false narrative.
Uh-huh.
Now, this guy, Charles McGonigal, was actually on the team that was investigating Trump. If there's more data and more information out there, they're trying to seal this up and hold it into a legal case so that people can't be talking about it.
Yeah.
So that there can't be information put out. And I think that's really absolutely despicable, but you're seeing it over and over again with the Department of Justice trying to cover their own behinds because of what they did in the previous election cycle, in the 2020 election cycle, all the way back to 2016, when they made false allegations, when they took information that was known to be bad and used it to actually shape the entire narrative in Washington with all the media to undermine a sitting president of the United States.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question. It might sound like I'm stretching here, but I don't think I am. Given the fact that Adam Schiff lost his position, divisive in terms of politics in the United States, would you say Adam Schiff has been?
Well, I think he's been one of the worst.
I do too.
He's one of the most divisive characters there are out there.
Yeah.
And I think he, again, used his position as a legitimate voice to media to tell lies and to fabricate this. Very, very damaging. And of course, he's, you know, remember, he's kind of the Hollywood district is where he gets his support from.
Right.
And those are very powerful people that have very powerful interests and very influenced by Chinese money into the region. So once again, I think that's very damaging. I think the connection between Deripaska and Hunter Biden is even more interesting because he was seeking – Hunter Biden was seeking $80,000 fee to dig up dirt on Deripaska for Alcoa, the Alcoa U.S. aluminum company.
Yeah.
These are interesting connections, and as you start to see – this information about Burisma and Ukraine, more involvement with Russia, and of course the information from China opened up by the House in, oversight committees and these investigations, I think there's going to be a lot of damning evidence of involvement and potential very dangerous involvement from senior leaders in the U.S. government, including Mark Warner, Senator Mark Warner, head of the intelligence Senate Intelligence Committee, who was reaching out to Barack Deripaska to talk to him. And there's in this story, it's very detailed emails with Deripaska's lawyer and his lobbyist talking with Mark Warner. This is during the whole Russia collusion narrative. Yeah. This stuff is so damning, and it's so corrupt, and it is so awful. Yeah. It's hard to believe you couldn't even make a movie about it and people believe it.
Oh, they will. I mean, they will make a movie out of this. There's no question about that. History,
if they lose.
History is not going to let this one slide. No, I think, and they will slide personally. I think the fact that the Republicans got rid of Schiff, and I think that this Pelosi Act is really, I hope it does pass, because it really, really is going to show my neighbors all around the country how serious the Republicans are to really clean this place up. Because I think they are serious, you know. I think Kevin McConnell's a good guy.
Kevin McCarthy.
McCarthy, I'm sorry, yeah. I think he's a good guy.
I think he's a politician. I don't trust anyone that way, but he seems to be pushing things in the right direction.
I agree 100%. Jim, we got to cut it. We're at half an hour.
Yeah, all right.
Let's get some comments today, you guys. I'm not leaving the studio until I hear from you. Jimmy, always a pleasure.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.